Yep.
Let it be noted that we started our meeting at 3:32 on December 8th, 2020. And I would request an approval of the minutes, a motion that thereto.
So moved.
And I will second that. In favor, all?
Aye.
Aye. The motion is carried. I would invite members of the public who have a comment to make about any items that are not listed on the agenda, recognizing that the board policy is that 3 minutes are allotted for any individual that wishes to so speak. Andrea, do we have anybody from the board, from the public who wishes to comment?
No, sir, not at this time.
Thank you. Then we'll move the agenda along. The approval of the minutes of December 20th, a motion to that effect, please.
So moved.
And I will second it. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And move. Thank you very much, Madam President, soon to not be, by official notification, who may be reelected, you never know. And now we have our CEO report. Dr. Barzaga Conrado, please.
Nothing to report, thank you.
Nothing at this time, thank you. Okay, Mr. Christensen, issues related to your agenda.
Okay, so just a report on the, So just a report, I'm on my wrong page here, so forgive me. Okay, so at the Medical Plaza, as the board's aware and the committee's aware, we did go through a second bidding process with the landscape project at the Medical Plaza, $531,000. The contract has been awarded to Marina Landscape. So we will be coordinating meetings to get that work underway.
Expected completion date?
It will be 60 days from the actual start of the work. So we're working on that date as we speak. And so we need to have it completed by the end of February, if not earlier.
Are we expecting an interim report from our clerk of the works, our overseer, or not?
We will give updates at the interim committee meetings.
Okay, thank you. Any questions relating to the project? Okay, then let's move along to the financial reports. We will follow the Matthews protocol, if you will, and go through the items one at a time. Do we have any concerns about the district and the LMP financial statements?
Can we go to page 12, please? 12, I'm looking at my notes here. I just had a question about professional expenses, 5516. Where's professional expenses? Isn't it page 612? I thought it was page 12. Let me see.
Maybe page 11?
Maybe it's page 11. Yes, I think so.
Page 12 has the 6561 about two-thirds of the way down.
Oh, yeah, it's under the 6500, yeah. So professional fees, I was just wondering about the budget was $385 and we only have spent $79. Wondering what kind of professional expenses do we anticipate that would go under that category?
Well, we have in the past had pretty sizable expense with regard to consultants for the hospital lease/sale. Mm-hmm. That's been on a little bit of the back burner, so we have not incurred those expenses through the first part of the year.
Okay, so that's where they would go when we hopefully can get back into it. Would that be where that RFP that we just put out at the last board meeting, would that come from that account?
Yes, would come from that account. And then any of the consulting work that we do with whoever that firm is.
And page 13, the bank charges, 6435. I know I bring this up all the time. It just kind of surprises me that we have such high bank charges. Chris, is there any?
Well, what it is we have several of the tenants that prefer to charge their rent payments on credit cards, and we have incurred the cost of those credit card fees. So that's what's happening there.
Any chance that we could do like PayPal or some other, you know, with technology being, you know, so many choices now that we wouldn't have to, we could still accommodate them by doing it, but a different method that didn't cost us so much?
We can look into that, yes, definitely.
Because in my day job, I know that we have tenants that also like to pay by credit card, and we don't have that kind of expense. But explore that, that'd be good. And on page 15, are we still under that same thing? Yeah, page 15. Let's see, I had 2190, the investment fees payable. Again, same thing, is that Chris, any comment or explanation as to, do you think that that's reasonable? Is that just seems kind of high again, but.
Yeah, so if you recall at last month's committee meeting when Keith Stribling was with us, he had indicated that they are, Highmark is reducing their fees by 50%.
Okay.
So we will see a reduction coming.
Okay. Yeah, so very good. Thank you.
It's been about 9,000 a month, roughly. But hopefully we'll see much less.
Thank you. And still on that, yeah, I think we're good for the first one.
Yeah. Any other concerns, Letty?
I'm going on to page 24, but I'm kind of skipping on.
Yeah, let's just go through the agenda, make sure we capture everything. Any issues related to accounts receivable on page 19?
No.
Page 20, district deposits. Page 21, property tax receipts. Are those on schedule, Chris, basically? Or those?
There's a little bit of a lag there, it appears. The amounts aren't too far off, but what I'll be interested in seeing is, since we have the larger property tax payments coming in, typically December, January, $1 million and almost $2 million on the second payment. Be interesting to see if we get those starting in December or if they bump to the January as well. But
so it's really just timing.
Yeah, and certainly I don't anticipate being any less, because the property tax values have not gone down. And I the only way that I think it would be less is if people have had issues with making actual payments.
Thank you.
Yeah. I paid mine.
Yeah, me too. okay, moving along to deposits, Letty, on page 22, 23.
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, pay the district check register. Anything related to the district check register?
Yeah, I do have a question on page 24. Agostino Creative, is that, what are we paying them for?
Which one did you say? I'm sorry.
Agostino Creative, that one, 12, 16206.
That is, I'm trying to think. Oh, that's regarding the district history book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you. I think
say it again. I didn't hear you. District what?
The district history book that's being worked on. So we've had the author or the writing of that pretty much completed. So we're moving into the second stage of that, which is design and layout work.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. All right. The expenditures relative to the credit card, page 26. Check register for LMP on page 27. The retirement protection plan, has there been any changes in our accounts in any way?
No movement from October to November.
No movement at all, okay. And the grant payment schedule, page 29. Okay, it looks like everything is under.
I have a question, not on what's on there, but Coachella Valley Volunteers in Medicine. It's kind of a unrelated thing, but I see on here that we do anticipate giving them $149,000. Donna, I guess my question is, how are they doing? Are they seeing a lot of clients? And because I know we've helped the FQHCs, and FQHCs have a little bit more possible revenue with getting reimbursed and all that, but the volunteers in medicine, are they, I know I bring this up every now and then about, what is their, are they okay? Have you had any?
They're okay. Yeah, they're open up. I think they're kind of open up on a smaller schedule, but because they were closed in the beginning of COVID, but they're doing okay. Yeah,
they're doing okay. They don't need any more money right now. For I just think about all the people that probably are underinsured right now. That's
On the same token, Conrado, are we getting any additional, I'm going to call it pressure, inquiries, requests related to food distribution these days, given the nature of what's going on? Is there any additional pressure we're anticipating?
Not yet.
If there were to be some concerns, do we have a mechanism by which we can respond quickly without formal bureaucratic delay? Should a circumstance like that arise, or do we need to go through a formal distribution question? Is there a way to authorize Conrado to have I don't know how you would characterize it, an available contingency fund maybe of a certain amount specifically related to food distribution? Can't hear you, Jeff.
And yeah, sorry about that. You could. It's all. It's just as long as it gets approved by the board. I mean, that's the main thing. So you could have a set of some sort of fund aside, but it would need to come to the board for action and authorization. But as long as you do that, shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. Well, I want to make sure he has the flexibility to act quickly. Yeah. If and when that becomes necessary, especially over the holidays, because that's. Could be an additional stressor when people try to do the right thing for their kids and it just gets crazier and crazier. So, Conrado, if it's necessary, since we're all in town, I suspect you can call an immediate meeting if that contingency should occur, so that we can react quickly to that in that outside opportunity. Thank you. All right, well, since there's no other issues relative to the board, I'd like to call the question. All those in favor of accepting the financial reports as submitted and discussed?
So moved.
And I will second that. In favor, I'll say aye.
Aye.
So moved. In terms of financial reports are accepted. We have another item on the agenda related to the professional services agreement. Is that something you're going to discuss, Chris, or is that Conrado going to discuss that? Whoever is appropriate.
I'll address that if that's okay, Conrado.
Yes, of course.
So the fire sprinkler system at the Medical Plaza, a little while back, we did all the underground work. So we have the infrastructure in. On the east side of the building, quite a bit of the interior work has been completed. now we're focusing mostly on the west side, and you know, a lot of the suites are occupied, so we're having to work around tenants being in the building. Our initial approach with it was to work with the tenants as they either renewed their lease or we had new tenants moving in, to include the interior sprinkler system at that time. We have had success with two or three of the tenants. Others that are with their TI work, you know, they're only doing minimal kinds of things like paint and floor covering, so they don't want to deal with the sprinkler system. And so they're asking us to take care of that. So it's quite a bit more expensive to do individual suites. So what the approach we're taking is to go through a bidding process to bid the entire completion of the facility. And then we'll just have to work with scheduling with the tenants to accomplish that work. So Chris Mills with Press Loop 6 Greenwood Architects has been working with us on the landscape project as well as the prior sprinkler system. So would like to engage his services in working through the bidding process as well as the project management.
I move approval.
So second, I'll second that. But I just a point of discussion, an anticipated completion date for this, Chris, if everything stays on track?
You know, we're working through getting, you know, schedule of estimated costs and a schedule put together. It's kind of a wild card because, like I say, we're going to have to work with tenants, you know, around their business schedule and, you know, however we can make that work.
So it's not determined yet what we're looking to an end date yet.
Right, right. Okay. I mean, I think it's just going to be as soon as possible. And
okay, and I'll second Letty's motion.
My other question, as a follow-up to your question, Arthur, is do you have a rough estimate as to how much it's going to cost, the actual project?
I don't know that yet. We're okay. We're in the middle of getting estimates done.
Okay, that's fine.
A ballpark guess, maybe 150 to 200,000.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe more, but I just a guess.
By the way, it's a technical question. Is any of the fire suppression material other than water? In other words, is there any halon or any other requirements for particular parts of the building?
It's all water.
What?
All water.
It's all water. And is that consistent with code today for medical office building?
Yes, for what we need there, it's that meets code.
Okay, thank you. The motion is as stated. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion is carried. Our next item is a discussion item related to the Lyft Verizon agenda that was proposed to us a while back. And the floor is open for discussion. Conrado, do you want to introduce the subject?
Sure. At the last board workshop we had, it was a special meeting of the board. We had a conversation about housing as a social determinant of health. And it was a rich discussion. The board directed staff to have further conversation with Lyft to Rise through different committees. So today we're bringing Lyft to Rise again before our board through the finance committee, and to give us the opportunity to ask questions about how to, if the board makes a decision to support these efforts related to affordable housing, what would be the right mechanism? When we had the initial conversation, we were using a term that it's very well known and broadly used in the foundation world, which is a program-related investment. There are many examples on how public entities that are not private foundations have supported this type of work, And I think we have landed more recently on a different term for that type of agreement, which would be a recoverable grant. And we wanted to keep going with this exploration of what will be the best mechanism. I believe Jeff had some conversation with pro bono legal representation that Live to Rise is trying to secure, and there is another law firm that has had conversations with Jeff. And so that's the intention today. I'm not sure how we will have a clean cut approach to this, other than we have a Live to Rise before our board members here, and we can ask questions about this topic. So if I may, I would like to start with the question of what is the proposed mechanism to support this effort? And I think Heather can help us with that.
Heather, you have to unmute yourself.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I almost exited the meeting accidentally. Thank you. Thank you, Conrado. And thank you again, everyone, for allowing us to spend time with you today. I think that we've had lots of conversations in the last couple of weeks. I wanted to just set a little bit of context from the start, that ultimately the goal is to figure out how the district might make a catalytic investment in the Housing Catalyst Fund, in this regional investment vehicle, in a way that's powerful and moving, and also a way that is respectful and mindful of the unique financial position of the healthcare district and its obligations. And so, like Conrado said, we started with the idea of whether or not it might be feasible to consider a PRI. I think for multiple reasons, that doesn't seem to be a clear-cut path. The next path that seems feasible and plausible, albeit it is in some ways groundbreaking, particularly for a healthcare district, would be to pursue the possibility of the district making a recoverable grant to Live to Rise for the Housing Catalyst Fund. So I wanted to couch this with a little bit of like what the goal is to figure out what's a mechanism to make a powerful investment that is in the center of the district's aims as pursuing bold solutions to the social determinants of health, and simultaneously is mindful of the district's unique position. So I don't know if there's any other context, Mike or Nancy, if you want to add anything from the top. I think we're open to discussion. We know there's a lot of questions, both legal questions and questions around the financial mechanisms of this. I think one thing where we sort of have landed internally is we've begun to work with ORIC, which Jeff, they shared with us through like tangentially that folks that they know you and have longstanding relationships. They came to us through our friends at the San Francisco Housing Accelerator Fund. They are their pro bono counsel as well. Ultimately, what we think would be best is if we are invited to submit a proposal, for there to be a legal opinion about that, so that we can submit something that's concrete, and so that you have something that's concrete to move from. But I think that's sort of where, that's at least where we're thinking today, but I'll pause for a second and let Mike or Nancy add anything, and then totally open for questions.
Yeah, nothing from me, Heather. I think you did a great job of setting the stage.
Thank you. Mike Walsh.
No, I don't have anything else to add. That was great, Heather. So if anything pops up, we'll be happy to jump in.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, do we have any reactions from members of our organization? Jeff, do you have a reaction to the proposal?
Well, I mean, it's sort of evolved. We only had one discussion, and which was basically about the PRI and the difficulties with a PRI structure. So I would just like to understand a little better what's the structure? Okay, so if I understand this, we would be in the area of a grant from the district, and who would be receiving the grant?
Sure. So Lift to Rise would be receiving the grant. The Low Income Investment Fund will manage the fund and will essentially be the fiscal agent. There's a firewall between Lift to Rise's regular operating funds and at anything to do with the housing fund. So the funds will be managed by the Low Income Investment Fund, but the awards are made to Lift to Rise.
Okay, and who is the Low Income Investment Firm? Who is that entity?
Yeah, so the Low Income Investment Fund, Nancy, who's on the phone with us, she is their former CEO. They are one of the leading CDFIs, community development financial institutions in the country. While Nancy was there for over 20 years, she raised their platform from $30 million to over $2 billion. They've leveraged more than $10 billion in communities in the last 30 years. They are one of three leading CDFIs in the country, and probably the most reliable possible for a fund like this. And their 30 years of operations, and Nancy can speak to this in more detail, their loss rate is less than 1%.
Have any other agencies of our profile, district agencies, ever contributed to a fund like this anywhere in the country?
I can take a shot at that. Yeah. And if it's possible to turn the camera on, that would be great, because I feel like I can kind of make eye contact if you do that.
I think you have to turn it on, Nancy.
Yeah, it keeps telling me I can't. It says it's disabled. So yes, this is not unusual at all for public entities to do. There are a couple of examples in the Bay Area we've provided some of these, where the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, for example, seeded a fund that my former organization set up called the Transit-Oriented Affordable Housing Fund.
Excuse me, Nancy, by the way, we can see you on camera, just so you know.
Oh, you can. I better smile then. It looks like, yeah, it looks like my video is now on. Thank you. So we did that with the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. We also had an arrangement with the state of California for something called the Golden State Acquisition Fund that also provided grant proceeds that helped us raise about $100 million for affordable housing throughout the state of California. And so I would say this is fairly well-trod ground.
I'm happy to work with the ORIC people, because like Heather said, I've actually stumbled into one of the attorneys up there called me, but there's no healthcare districts. The example you give us is with Metropolitan's a whole different animal. I mean, they get federal funding, and it's a much different animal. Now, that doesn't mean that we couldn't structure something in the form of a grant, but I would have to work with the ORIC people to see exactly how that would be. And looking at it, it looked like there was a requirement in the Metropolitan grant that there be a 5-to-1 match.
Right.
And there was oversight provisions that met the Metropolitan company was, you know, Transit Authority was involved in. And so there's a lot of things that would, you know, terms and conditions to that, if it was going to be structured along the way that was structured, that we would have to look into. And I do think it's important that we get an opinion from ORIC that healthcare districts can do this, you know, which is a legal opinion for the protection of the board members. Because if we can't, and it was construed to be inappropriate expenditure, then the directors that voted for it would be on the hook, so to speak. And so I want to be very careful, as you can appreciate, in making sure that this was structured like that. The other part is in reading the materials, And I think Chris brought this out, but in looking at some of the information you provide us, it didn't really look like it was a second, a subordinate deed. And it sort of, you know, the sounds of the way you looked at it was if there was anything left over, it had come back. So if the intent and purpose of this is to make this truly a recoverable grant, that the money would come back to the district, we would have to make sure, whether it's through the first trust deed or however we'd have to do that, we'd have to work with this other entity to make sure that it really is a recoverable grant. And if it's not a recoverable grant, then the board needs to make a decision as to whether or not that's, you know, with the understanding that the money may not be coming back. That's the board's prerogative. But I think we're on a better track to look at this as a grant rather than strictly a loan, okay? And if we want to characterize it as a recovery, but I got to tell you, I mean, I'd have to, I left with Robin that she was going to talk to the other attorneys at the firm. And I kind of left it with her that we needed to circle back and talk a little more about how this would be structured so that we could understand it and the board could understand what the mechanism is and sure. what the deliverables were, for example, and all the things that we do with our typical grant. So I have some questions about that. So
yeah. Nancy, and just to put it in perspective, when this was presented at the last meeting where you gave us the larger scope of whatever, it was promoted as an investment. And as an investment, it's something that I cannot imagine how we could get involved in an investment that has an unsecured investment. So hopefully considering it, putting it into the realm of a grant is more than just a nomenclature change, but it really still doesn't address the issues of our exposure, especially since ultimately the monies flow out to proprietary organizations who make a return on investment. So mm-hmm. when we look at it, we have to look at it from the conservative perspective, and I don't mean politically conservative, I mean from the fiscally conservative perspective of, are we properly allocating our funds? Now, the other issue that we have, just so you can hear it from me, is the issue of scale. Our $10 million is less than a drop in your bucket. Our $10 million spent differently throughout the organization has profound impact, whether it's in food, whether it's in drugs, whether it's in sheltering. And the way I know I'm going to look at it is in the context of compared to what, not only on its merits, but also in the context of compared to what, where do we get the biggest bang for our buck, all things equal. And this is in no way a diminution of respect for the priority of housing. Please don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, it's clearly a serious issue, but as we look at our relatively small universe of funds compared to your humongous universe of funds and opportunities, it's something that's going to have to be considered in that context as well. Are there any other thoughts, Letty? Are there any thoughts you might have? Chris, is there any thoughts you'd like to add, Conrado, before we adjourn this question?
I'll follow Conrado because I'm still trying to digest what I'm learning. So
thank you, Letty. I want to address the issue of proprietary profits on funds made by the district. And I believe that Heather can answer the question of who are the developers, who is the low-income investment fund, which by my knowledge is a nonprofit organization, is a 501c3. So it's not a bank, it's not an investment bank, it's not a profit-making organization. And I guess, Heather, you can talk about the developers portion of this.
Sure. Mike, do you want me to start and then you go, or do you want to start?
That's fine.
Yeah, so the Low Income Investment Fund is essentially a nonprofit bank. That's what it is. It's a nonprofit. It only does mission-driven community work, community development work in low-income communities. That's why it's called the Low Income Investment Fund. The issue of profit. So we discussed this a little bit in the Strategic Planning Committee, the Program Committee. Every single unit of housing and the housing pipeline is 100% affordable. The strong, huge majority of folks that are developing nonprofit housing are nonprofit developers. An issue where it comes to, and it's entirely possible, and Mike Walsh can speak to this, where funders can say our funds are only touch projects that are being developed by nonprofit housing developers. The one critical component of the population that leaves out are Polancos, and we know that Polancos for low-income farm workers in the Eastern Coachella Valley are critically important. They are not always developed by a nonprofit housing organization. So just wanted to say, one, LIF is one of the biggest nonprofit banks in the country. Two, the projects are 100% affordable. And then if I may just briefly tap into Director Shore, your comment about scale. What the district's investment would do is catalyze and be in the same way that the district's early investment and our cash assistance and rental assistance work, that gave confidence to other funders to invest in a powerful way that showed local confidence. And that allowed us to multiply your investment times, I don't know, I think it was at least 30 at this point. And by the end of the year, we will be well past $10 million of investment in the community, which began with you all were the first six-figure investors. So just that's one thing on leveraging. But the second issue related to food insecurity and the other really important things that are happening in the community, the reason why we have to have a fund vehicle like this is because the reason why we have such significant food insecurity, homelessness issues, and other symptoms, they're all a symptom of people not making enough money and the critical deficit of housing that we have. So they're an outgrowth of that. Totally respect that the district has to be mindful, but the longer that we punt on long-term bold solutions, just the more that food bill and everything else, the symptoms of folks not being able to afford to have housing, not even to mention the severe negative health impacts of both the affordability crisis and the ways that people are coping by doubling and tripling up. So I wanted to hit those three things, but I know that Mike can also speak to the issue around affordability and your concern about any profits that might be related to the fund.
I have no concerns about affordability, but by the way, you know, there's two ways to look at matching grants. We could be the chicken and we could be the egg. If we were the chicken, we'd be putting the money up first. If we were the egg, we'd be involved in matching grants. And I would be a lot more respect in the logic of your argument for multiple leveraging. I would be very more inclined to match funds put up by others on a multiple basis than I would by being the chicken and being up front, so to speak, on the discussion. But that's a discussion for a future point. But may please appreciate I don't have issues relative to affordability.
Just on that point, Mr. Chairman. So what you're saying, Heather, is a condition of this would be that any of the contractors or developers would be nonprofit. This money would not be used by any to inure to the benefit of any for-profit companies that are involved in this.
Yeah, that's
project.
Absolutely. So again,
yeah, I mean, those are conditions we could look into.
Yeah. And I also just want to add from the top that Director Shore, we will match the district's funds 3-1 Nancy can speak to this, but both CDFIs, RCAC and the Low Income Investment Fund are matching dollar for dollar with capital, the funds that we raise.
New money or existing money?
New money to the Coachella Valley, yes.
New money to Coachella Valley. They didn't.
That's almost new money. That's almost new money.
It's new money. It's not ours. We don't have it if we don't get money to match with it.
Touche.
I guess.
I was going to, if I could, I was just going to also make a similar point, which is this is, I don't know whether you're the chicken or the egg. I kind of think of you as the egg, but because what we're asking you to do is to let us hatch something and let it grow. And what we, if you would kind of take the telescope from you're just a drop in a big bucket and flip it around to the other side, we actually see you as the starting point of helping us.
We lost you after helping us.
Nancy, you froze like Elsa.
And only, which is very, I mean, it's hard to do that. That's a hard thing to be able to do when you're making grants, leveraging money in that way. And on top of that, once the money is available, it would actually, when it goes into the loans, those will be repaid and then the money will be redeployed. So there's a very good chance that this money will recycle two or three times during the grant period. So there's a tremendous leverage factor that you get from being at the ground floor with helping us put all of this together.
I just wanted to make briefly on, we don't have the slide with the cake of the layers, but in terms of where we returns the monies that we would be seeing from the district, it would be not, you're not at the bottom tier. So like if we're looking at the, from top to bottom, like the ones that are most likely to be recaptured would be the top, and it scales down. But like if, for example, like if it was a recoverable grant, you would be in like what would be the second tier from the bottom. So the more money we have at the anchored tier, which it goes to, I think a little bit, Director Shore, your point was like, would help de-risk your investment as well. So for example, if there was an end up being a loss, the loss wouldn't necessarily come from your funds. The grant capital that would be below you would pay back your funds plus the larger investment. And some of these things could be placed into whatever agreement that was made between the district and Live to Rise on what sort of conditions need to be placed in the level of liquidity, the level of leveraging, all of those sort of things could be conditions as part of a larger agreement. And also like there could be performance metrics in terms of the dollars amounts that are placed out into the fund. It could be $10 million over a number of years. And if those funds are not necessarily benchmarks aren't met, those could be brought back. A lot of these things, I think the starting point of the question is, does the concept work? And some of that's work that Mr. Scott's will come back and provide guidance on. But if the general concept is something that is agreeable and this is something that would work, then it's like the question is like what sort of technicalities or legalese need to be put into the agreement to protect both the district, but also make sure that the funds are usable enough so that the ultimate goal is achieved.
And Mike, I would like to see what you're proposing and who is drafting the agreements. So that's what would come forward to the board so we could get the idea and then discuss, you know, and massage the concept. I don't want to put the cart before the horse.
So I guess the question, like all of these sort of things, the best case is like a grant without any conditions and just give the money and move forward and like just make it work. And so it's like a little bit is like providing some direction from district staff of like what sort of risk tolerances or sort of things would need to come forward. And we could work through those on a case by case basis. And we like that's,
well, one of the things you might want to consider is a laddered program. Let's assume we agreed to X number of dollars on a 5-year on a repayment cycle. Dollars from year one come back in year five, and new dollars go out in year six. And the risk to dollars number one. So, I mean, Jeff, I would agree. You need to take a real hard look at the structure of the thing. There's opportunities that if we can respect the fiduciary duties we have to the community, it makes our job potentially easier.
And Director Shore, I think that those types of ideas, I think fully speak for Heather, but those are the things we would be willing to look at, float how they would work. I think what would be helpful is from a process standpoint, letting us know knowing that like we make the initial proposal, if that doesn't work, the ability to work with staff or with the board to come up with something that would be workable.
Understood. Thank you, sir. Thanks for your comments. Any other thoughts on this matter before we adjourn this question?
Go ahead, Letty.
No, you go ahead, Conrado.
So I think that the question of the legal opinion still remains, and I want to ask Jeff, how do we go about that? Is that something that we should request preemptively, or is something that we would expect to receive a proposal from Lift to Rise and then request the legal opinion?
I think we want to decide how we're going to structure this first, and then we can see what we need from a legal opinion. I mean, you know, this has evolved into a different animal as we've spoken even today. So, the necessity of a legal opinion and what that would consist of may change depending upon what the proposal is. Okay. So I think let's hammer out the details a little bit better, and then we can go from there as far as what the necessity is. I mean, if it's like Mike says, if it's a simple grant, we've got conditions and we've got some deliverables and things like that, then, you know, that's something that we've structured. And if the board approves that, we can look at it more as a traditional grant. But I'd like to get a little meat on the bones as to what we're looking at here, specifically as to whether this is a ladder approach, whether this is how we want to go about structuring this. I think it would be more helpful, and then go get the legal opinion, Conrado, if necessary.
Thanks,
Letty. Your comment.
Okay, Chris, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's been said a little bit, but just referring to the top paragraph that's on the page there, you know, that just gives indication to me that that this grant is not, you know, completely recoverable, or there's insecurity about it being completely recoverable. And I know, I guess, that maybe it's going to be put in there to say that it's recoverable. Just so that we're aware that it may be just a grant that's going out and we may get some portion of it back.
And Chris, just for some context, this is an example from one type of a recoverable grant. There are others that do have like a more strict guarantee language built into it. But these are all sort of things that would definitely be worked out in terms of with the district as to what the level of risk comfort the district has on how the agreement should be structured.
Okay.
I'll just amplify Mike's point. The idea behind a recoverable grant is not that you command recovery, but rather that it is possible. So it's that much better than a real grant in that some of the funds or potentially all of the funds are returned.
Letty, do you have comments that you want to add?
Yes, thank you for all the good questions and good overview, Heather. I think we definitely have covered a lot of the legal issues or at least brought them forth, and that we'll continue to learn more as Jeff goes through the process of getting some kind of assurances that he can educate the rest of the board. First us and then the board. The other part of that is the finance. I'm understanding of how the money will work, but in terms of the district's finances, is there a preference on how Conrado, if you were given the go-ahead by the board that that there is a majority to move forward in this, I know before they would actually do that, they would ask the question is, how would this impact us financially? With what we have coming up in this next year, with 1 year closer to having to do some kind of a lease arrangement or purchase, however that goes, how is this gonna affect us in terms of the obligations that we still have before us?
Including seismic.
Yes, that's the one I'm counting on. Yeah.
Yes. Well, right now, all the money we have, we put it in a investment account. That investment is not giving us much in return. So it wouldn't make much of a difference. And that would depend on the amount that is allocated to this. And I believe we should look into what we have available from this granting cycle for the fiscal year of 2020-2021 to see what we can allocate from that. And I don't know if we can commit anything from future grant years. Also, if we have a recoverable grant, which is not a loan per se, I think this question will go to Chris, whether that can be in the books as a receivable. Otherwise, it would not reflect as a lost asset or liability in our books.
It can be reflected as a receivable, but what I'm concerned about is how legitimate the receivable is, if it's questionable.
Right. How? Any other questions, any other comments on this matter? If not, I'd like to find, do we have any other new business before the committee?
Well, before we leave that topic on the finances part, as we continue to explore this in this committee with getting some response back from Jeff on the legal issues, so can staff be prepared to give us some options that they think are, I guess, from most feasible to less feasible for us to consider? Okay. Thank you.
Any other points relative to this matter? Any new business to come before the committee?
Yeah, Director Shore, just one quick thing. I think I see in your materials that there was a copy of the legal document between the Metropolitan Transportation Commission and the Low Income Investment Fund. That was shared with us under an NDA, and so it should be confidential. So if at all possible, we'd like to keep that confidential.
Well, thanks for telling us.
We did tell you guys, but I think it got lost somewhere.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, if it's public finance, I mean, as a practical matter, it may have been provided to you under an NDC, but it's a practical matter, it's a public record. But we're not going to share it with anybody.
That's all. We'll visit you on behind bars. Not a problem.
Yes.
I'm going to call the meeting to a close unless there's any other business before the committee. If not, we stand adjourned at 4:25. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen from our guests today, thank you very much for your input. We are now going to convene the Desert Healthcare Foundation meeting. If there's no reason to for a quick break, we can move right ahead. I'd like to call the meeting to order at 4:26 on December 8th, 2020. Do we have an approval of the agenda?
So moved.
And I will second that. The floor is open for public comment. Is there anyone who has in the queue, Andrea, for public comment?
No public comment.
No public comment, then we'll move right along to approval of the minutes. I'd like to move approval of the minutes of November 10, 2020. Is there a second for this motion?
Second.
All in favor, say aye. Thank you very much. The minutes are approved. Dr. Barzaga, Conrado, do you have a report of any consequence for today's meeting?
Nothing at this time.
Thank you, sir. Chris, the financial report requires some action, and would you like to present it, please?
We can go through each section. The financial statements for page 4 to 8.
Okay, are there any concerns regarding the financial statements, pages 4 to 8?
Can you go to page 4, please? Is there a number supposed to be in there?
Good catch.
It's one of those things that's below the radar, Letty. They did it in invisible ink. You have to have a special lemon to see those. Okay, we'll make an amendment. We'll adjust for that. I suspect, Chris, no problem.
I missed what you said.
I said
the index. There's no numbers in the index.
Well, we don't have numbers in the index.
Well, we
really.
What's the purpose of the form?
Yeah, why is it there?
It's just to indicate the flow of the documents. We have the page numbers on the agenda.
Huh. I always thought there was something too, but I guess I'm seeing things. Wow.
I see. Okay. Then do we have any questions?
Thank you for that explanation, Chris.
We never had page numbers on, so if you want them, we can do. But
That's fine. That's fine. Any questions about the deposits on page 9? Check register on page 10.
Page 10, I just have a question. Actually, that's not page 10, is it? Okay, so on the grants, the $30,000 grants, that's from the county grant, right? You're giving $30,000 to each organization. And you're subtracting that from the 120. Is that the case here?
Yeah. So we booked 120,000.
Okay. So really paid for each one. Okay. Okay. Just wanted to confirm that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any questions on page 11 related to the credit card expenditures this month?
No.
General grant schedule questions on page 12.
And Letty, that's where you'll see on that schedule all the 120,000.
Yeah, so that was my follow-up question on that, is that as you gave him the first 30,000, that's the first payment. Are you going to give it like 4 installments, or how are you going to be allocating that? Is it based on benchmarks that they meet, that they then get their second, or how are you distributing that?
It's on installment, Letty, when we get we're requesting progress reports every month, and then when we get monthly reports, then they'll get another advance. It's every quarter.
Okay, so this is just a procedural question. When the board approved, when this went to the board to get the money from the county, is this an action item that we are approving these grants, because this is the first time that we actually are getting the list of the organizations that you gave the money to? Is this an action item, or is it just a financial, sir?
Letty, this was approved by the board, and the list of organizations was actually given to the board at that meeting.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you for
reminding me.
Thank you very much. Okay, any other questions related to that? Do we have any new business to come before this committee? Hearing none.
No, but let me share with you that we received notification last night that we may receive an enhancement to the Coachella Valley Equity Collaborative for another $500,000. That will come from the Public Health Institute, and will give us as a foundation a little money, extra money for our operations. And the Department of Public Health is the one we have asked them to do the allocation the same way that they did before those items were brought to your attention. They had made the determination of how much funding would go to each organization and which organizations were going to be the recipients of those funds. So we're working with them on that as well.
Are they directed funds or are they general funds for our discretion?
They are directed funds, and we will have one allocation for our discretion.
One of, okay. And what's the total again, please? 500,000. You're expecting 500,000 when?
Yes. Sometime next month, probably.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent.
Congratulations. Is that County Public Health or?
No, it's the Public Health Institute.
Oh, okay.
In the Bay Area, yes.
Okay, good. Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Any other matters to come before this committee before I call for adjournment? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. We have completed the business of our foundation meeting for the month of December.
Stay safe.
Arthur, stay safe. Yes, sir.
Arthur, you run a pretty good meeting. It looks like you've done this a couple of times before.
Yeah, this is my first. You know? No, I still have my training wheels on. It's like training wheels on a bicycle.
Oh, come on.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Stay safe. And have a happy and a healthy, merry, and a safe new year.
We're going to see you in a couple of days.
We'll see you Thursday, Arthur.
Oh, never mind. Okay.
We'll see you the day after tomorrow and next week again.
There you go. You see what happens when your memory goes to hell? That's what happens.